Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. And Dave, you know, I do this by rote. I do this intro. And one of my buddies told me the other day that, you know, that all happens on the intro. You're just repeating yourself. So maybe I should come up with a new intro and say, hey, it's Dave and Dave. Let's get after it.
Yeah, you're not going to hurt my feelings however you do it. I would have never known unless you brought that up, but I guess that's why you have listeners and why we're supposed to accept feedback as well, too. So, I don't know, maybe we'll think about that for season seven.
So, listen, we were at the game Sunday, Steelers-Colts, obviously they blew them out, and I just want to look, we have so many listeners who – are so nice to us with the donations and the emails. And I got a chance to meet Melanie. She was in town from California. And I got a chance to meet Emmett, who was in town from Ireland. And they couldn't have been nicer. It's just I got to hang out with both of them. And they're wonderful people. And the podcast has done wonderful things for me, not just meeting you and the other things that it's provided me. But people come up every time I do the pregame show. But both these people were just fantastic. I know Melanie's written for the site, providing her medical insights. And Emmett came over, you know, he came over from Ireland, never been to the United States before, brought me a bottle of Irish whiskey. He doesn't drink, so I just took care of it myself. And it was just a blast. We went to a tailgate. I had a chance to have some cocktails with them, with Melanie and her friend the night before, but fantastic. And anybody who is in Pittsburgh and wants to do that kind of stuff, I'm all for it. And it was great meeting those guys.
Yeah, I think it's hard to wrap your brain around sometimes as well, too. You know, how far this thing, you know, I see the stats. I see what country, you know, people are listening to this to the podcast in, but it really doesn't really kind of hit home until someone sends you that email or in your case, you talk to somebody face to face that you've impacted them and they live, you know, across the great, you know, the great pond and all like that.
So Israel, who was in Jerusalem, and I don't know if that's his real name, but he you know, emails us on a daily basis, and we just hear from people, so many people around the world. I loved his he sent us an email, said when Tomlin said, what other position would you rather be in this time of year? And he said, I think I'd rather be a team that's 10-2. And I got a good chuckle from that.
Absolutely. And they will play that 10-2 team this week as well, too. I don't know. Where do you want to start? The Tomlin press conference and the injuries?
I think Heath's a question mark. And it sounds like, I mean, I'm sure Sean Spence is a question mark as well. From what I've heard, talking to some of the guys who were around the facility the past couple of days, Will Gay looked good after the game. And of course, Mike's never going to clear a guy in the concussion protocol on a Tuesday at the press conference, but I expect Will Gay to play. So I think those are the two guys, just the guys coming off last game, that are questionable.
Yeah, I would agree too. He did, and here's the thing about William Gay. He has never missed a game in his entire career. You know that streak's going to probably come to an end at some point, but I'm with you. I doubt that it's going to be this week. And I think Tomlin even just said after the game the other night was that he's in concussion protocol. He's not even sure if he has a concussion. It's not hard to locate that play in the fourth quarter where Gay, I think, submarines. I think, I can't remember if it was a pulling guard or a pulling tackle. but he kind of submarines himself at the feet and got hit on the helmet there. Like I said, that was late middle of the fourth quarter there, and Gay never returned. Sean Spence with a hamstring, he of course missed the game the other night against the Colts, and Matt Spaeth with that knee, saw him get bit over the pile one time. I think he still played, after that, obviously did, judging by the snap totals, but probably a little inflammation, a little soreness there, so I'd expect him to kind of be limited this week. So really the only one primetime player that you kind of think, may really has a chance to miss the game against the Bengals on Sunday would be Heath Miller. And boy, we're talking about a guy in Heath Miller that really got a lot of burn early in that game against the Bengals as well, too, last time around.
Yeah, Dave, we looking at that game and what the Bengals played, they played that shell. Basically, they played that cover two. The two safeties are going to play deep. And we have seen the Steelers, their signature now is that they're going to go deep on you all the time. And maybe, we saw what Seattle did. It wasn't exactly that kind of thing. They took Antonio Brown out with Richard Sherman. And for me, when I look at this, I think what I've really been impressed with is with Ben's ability and willingness to take the middle of the field the last two games against Seattle, and then again opening it up against the Colts, take the middle of the field, loosens things up on the outside, and then, okay, they'll take their shots. I don't think the Bengals are going to get beat deep in this game. And I think the way the Steelers need to attack this is the middle of the field. And I think, hopefully Heath can play, but if not, Jesse James, Marcus Wheaton. They're going to – I don't know if Antonio in the drags or the crossing routes or the square ends type stuff – that's not, they want to get the ball in his hands and they'll do things. But I think the other guy is going to be huge factors here. And I don't think the deep shots are going to be the way to go against the Bengals here. The Steelers are going to have to play the Bengals like teams play the Steelers when they're effective, and take what's given to them and take stuff over the middle of the field, and have, rather than having four play drives where you hit the home run, I think it's going to be 7, 8, 9, 10 play drives that's going to get it done.
Yeah, and if you go back and you look statistically at the last time these two teams hooked up. Now, I don't know how much you want to put on that being Roethlisberger's first game back from his injury. I tend to think that had a little bit of something to do with it in that game. Of course, not everything. But when you talk, especially like you kind of were going the direction with the deep ball to open up with, Roethlisberger attempted 13 deep throws in that game. Of course, deep throw meaning anything further down the field than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. He attempted 13 such throws, non-penalty throws, and he only completed 3 of those passes, 23.1%. Three of those deep passes intercepted. Three of those. So he completed 3 to his own guys. He completed 3 to their guys, and then that left 7 others that were incomplete there. So I'm with you. I would expect that the Bengals are going into this game with the same mindset, make throws up underneath. And I think the only way that changes is if you give Ben Roethlisberger opportunity in the pocket to throw the football. Now, the difference between, I think, now, this time around, than several weeks ago against the Bengals is I think there was a concerted effort for Ben to get the football out quicker because it was his first game back from injury as well, too. So I'm with you. I'm not expecting the Bengals to give up a lot of explosive plays. I do expect Ben to probably still take 10 to 13 shots down the field. Hopefully he can complete about 40% of them this time. And then on top of it, I you have to get that running game going, because even though – we talk about running backs kind of being fungible nowadays. I really think that if you can open up the game running and establish that running game, it will kind of force those safeties up into the box, and then that'll give you some shots maybe against some cover one or some cover three downfield.
Dave, when you look at this team, and we'll have Paul Denner Jr. of the Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com, join us here in the back 20 minutes of the show to get into this more in a more detailed way. You look at the Bengals roster, I think you and I both agree that it's as deep a roster as there is in the NFL. they're relatively healthy for, you know, teams at this point in the season. Throw out Andy Dalton, because look, Andy Dalton's he's an MVP candidate. So we'll see what happens in the playoffs. It's all about Andy Dalton. And that's, you know, their whole season is like the Penguins season. It's like, you know, okay, we're going to get to the playoffs. We'll see how Andy Dalton plays in the playoffs. What's the weakness in their team?
In the Bengals?
Is there a weakness? I mean, because offensively, there is. I don't see one offensively. I mean, their line's good. Their receivers are great. Tight end backs, they got two backs. I mean, that's really good. Geno Atkins playing at a high level. Their D-line's solid with Dunlap. You know, is there one weakness? Maybe they don't have outstanding linebackers, because I don't know that they have I don't see a visible weakness.
Yeah, and really, if you look at them statistically on both sides of the football, that really backs it up. And they have a good enough defense to win, and they have definitely a good enough offense to win as well, too. So I think if you were to say where is their weakness, it would probably be how they handle injuries, and more specifically, it'll be interesting to see if they're without a guy like Tyler Eifert this week, because that will take some adjustment. But across the board, looking at their entire 53-man roster, there's not a lot of holes in their team, and that's why they really do have a good chance of getting past the first round of the playoffs this year, and not only that, making a deep run into the playoffs, because I think they match up well with a team like Denver. I think they can match up well against a team like the New England Patriots as well, too. So, yeah, I mean, I think the way you beat them is to kind of let them, you know, hope that they kind of beat themselves by Andy Dalton maybe having an off game. And we saw him do that. Really, he didn't have a great game against the Steelers several weeks
ago.
No,
he didn't. He didn't.
And then he followed it up with a bit of a clunker against the Houston Texans, and wasn't that the game? What game was it that Eifert dropped all those passes in? Do you remember? Was that the?
I didn't see the Texans game, so I don't know.
I'm trying to remember if that's the game that Eifert dropped on. One of those games.
Texans game was Monday night game where at home where they lost 10-6, and at that point we thought the Texans were a bad team, and that's where their defense turned things around and they played well. As I said, I didn't see it. I saw some of the highlights, and J.J. Watt was really good. But and look, to your point, the way they lose is you make Andy Dalton not a good quarterback, because the rest of it's good. And that's what happened. The Steelers had a chance to win that game in Pittsburgh because Andy Dalton wasn't a good quarterback. I mean, he made a couple terrible throws in the red zone, and Antoine Blake made a play, making that pick in the red zone. And the Steelers did, you know, a really good job. Ben had a bad game. I mean, and that was the thing. And Ben's had some bad games against them, throwing the pick to Leon Hall a couple of years ago at the end of the game. And you know, what did he throw? The three picks? Were there three turnovers in that game? The first
one? A couple weeks ago there were three. Andy Dalton played a poor game, and Ben Roethlisberger played a worse one.
Right there with him.
And that
we all
was
thought somebody would win 31-28 was, you know, that wasn't it.
Yeah, the Steelers very easily, I think, if you don't turn the football over like that, because what was it, something like 10 of the Bengals' points came off of turnovers there in that game. So, look, against good teams like the Bengals, like the Denver Broncos, like the Patriots, you simply can't turn the football over and give them short fields. Well, you can't do that in any game, but you most certainly can't do it against teams like that. You know, you go back and you look at what the Kansas City Chiefs have done, and we joke about this all the time because I just am not an Alex Smith fan, but Alex Smith is a game manager.
Three interceptions on the season.
Yeah, and it's almost like, you know, it's almost like the Chiefs just sit back and wait for you to put the gun in your mouth, and then they help you pull the trigger, you know, because they're that opportunistic kind of team. And if you go back, you look at all the points that the Chiefs scored off of turnovers, and if you look at the stats that Alex Smith had in that game, you think, man, Alex Smith didn't, you know, really didn't play overly well. And it's because, you know, he doesn't have to. And I think, you know, I think the Bengals are a little bit of that this year as well, too. I think their defense is good enough that they're getting the takeaways and they're setting their offense up in kind of prime situations, whereas the Steelers' defense has been very, very inconsistent this year that you kind of have that offense needing, always feeling like they've got to get the four-play drive or the big play there. So it's going to be an interesting – look, I think this is a game that the Steelers can win. And just judging alone by the way that they played the Bengals earlier in the year, but if they're going to do it, they can't. I don't think they can let this get into a shootout. A and B, they obviously just can't turn the football over this time around.
Yeah. Okay. So from the presser, it's clear that Brandon Boykin's going to be the slot corner in much of the fashion that he was. He won't get every snap, but he's, you know, if the Steelers are in, if they're in the nickel, if they're in their, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's really their base defense now, but we'll call it the nickel defense. If they're in that 70% of the time, he's going to get a lot of the snaps. He didn't play the first two series in the slot, and then he came in for Cockrell the first series that he came in. And then for most of the rest of the time when he came in on nickel, he was coming in for Blake. And I think that's what you're going to see. It won't always be for Blake. They want Blake in for his tackling. Mike made a point of saying that Blake made his special teams tackle. Okay, he's fresh, whatever. But that's what it's going to be, Dave. And I'm sure Steeler fans are happy about that. The obvious question is, why didn't they do it 6 weeks ago? But it is what it is. So the snaps are going to be distributed relatively evenly, probably between the three of them. And Cocker's probably, if you're going to guess who's going to get the most snaps, it's probably going to be Cockrell. He's going to be on the field almost all the time. And I you know, we'll see, assuming Gay's healthy, you know, he will get the most, but, and then Blake will probably get half the snaps like he did last week.
Yeah. And the only time, and I'm looking at the charting that Alex Kazor did, just finished up on that game the other night. The only time we, of course, saw Cockrell, Blake and Boykin all on the field together was the final, 12 plays that William Gay did not play after leaving that game with a concussion. So when you go back and you look through this, they did not, they started the game with Gay in the slot. But that quickly changed once Boykin entered the game, at that point, then it primarily was with Cockrell on one side and Gay on the other side. So in other words, base, you know, a lot of the base that we saw featured Blake. And we kind of thought that too prior to that podcast.
Oh, you were dead on about it. You hit it dead on Wednesday, last Wednesday's podcast.
Well, just thinking that, you know, probably even though he's playing injured, that you still think he's better, a more physical guy, at least going to come up and try to give you an attempt to square up on a run. He might not make the tackle right now, but you know, that, and by doing that rotation, as Mike Tomlin said as well too, it allowed him to probably keep him fresher, because he plays a lot of snaps on special teams. But as you said, Mike Tomlin, in so many words, said on Tuesday that, and I wrote about this one too. It's kind of going to be the new buzzword in Pittsburgh. It's snap redistribution. Redistribution of snaps is kind of the buzzword right now. Hey, whatever works. Do I think that Brandon Boykin played a huge part in that game the other night? Personally, I don't. I mean, he got the tipped interception off of a play that William Gay made in front of him. And then on the flip side, he did have the nice pass defense against Griff Whalen that we talked about the other day as well, too. It's not his fault, but I think one of these stations or somebody anointed him defensive player of the game. I guess what I'm trying to say is I wouldn't.
Okay, let's dismiss that. I mean, look, if you're the defensive player of the game and you're in the defensive backfield, it's, you know, look, well, whatever. I mean, people understand how that works. Defensive player of the game is guy making splash plays. It's going to be guy getting sacks or somebody close to the line of scrimmage making impact plays. To be it in the backfield, you know, you got to get a couple of interceptions, whatever. It's not, just like you said, Dave, he wasn't great, but he wasn't bad. And it just shows up if they throw at you and you get an opportunity to make plays, then you have an opportunity. He didn't have an opportunity to make a lot of plays, missed one tackle late, but he got the interception when he was there. It was nice to see him, for him, really, honestly, for him, just he got an opportunity early to make a play because Will Gay made the play for him, and he did what he had to do. He caught the ball.
Yeah, you put yourself in the right position to make a play.
Right, exactly. And that's when I asked Mike the question in the press conference. It was, how did he play? But, you know, again, it was, I asked him, was he alignment specific, and how was the communication? And Mike immediately said, look, that was never an issue. He's a smart guy. He had that stuff, and which was interesting. It's telling. He wasn't not playing because he didn't get it, because obviously Shamarco Thomas is not playing because he doesn't get it. That's not the question with Brandon Boykin. He gets it. He understands it. They just didn't think he was the best guy. Now he got an opportunity. He did fine. He's going to get more opportunities.
Now here's the thing. People will say, well, why didn't this happen earlier? Would it have made a difference in any other game? Let's not forget that William Gay, and this is according to Mike Tomlin, has been, quote, unquote, rock solid this year, especially with his play in the slot. So, you know, and we know that they usually keep these guys specific to sides on the outside.
So what we don't know, and what none of us can answer, let's just be honest about it, is Brandon Boykin a better outside corner than Cockrell or Blake? And
exactly.
Steelers don't think so.
Right.
Okay, so they decided that they want to rest. We can use whatever term we want. They wanted the outside guys to take less snaps because, by the way, they sucked in a couple of these games. And so they said, okay, we know Gay can play outside, so we'll give Boykin a shot inside to see if he can at least do a job that's comparable to Gay, and he did.
Right. So, you know, we'll see if this makes a difference moving forward. You're still going to run into situations where you're going to have, and we're going to see this on Sunday, you're going to have a guy named AJ Green getting snaps against a guy like either Ross Cockrell or Antoine Blake in some situations.
And
so
look, the Steelers are going to match up great against the Bengals, and the Bengals have a good secondary. The Bengals are going to match up even better against the Steelers with Tyler Eifert coming out off the tight end. Who's going to cover him? Man, it's a disaster. And I know most Steelers fans probably don't know a ton about Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, but they're really good players. They're really good players. They're not Martavis Bryant in that they have that upside, but they're Marcus Wheaton and more, baby. I mean, they can bring it, and they're quality guys. And so, the Steelers did a really good job of shutting them down the first time. And like I said, we all thought it was going to be 31-28. It wasn't. The quarterbacks didn't play great. I give the Steelers defense great. I think that was their best game. Really, Lawrence Timmons was really good in that game. But that's going to be a challenge. And again, I think it's a 31-28 game for sure.
Hey, and when you go back and you look back at that game, at least even statistically, we already hit on that Andy Dalton didn't have a great game, only 231 yards passing in that game, and over half of those went to A.J. Green, you know, 11 for 118. So A.J. Green is going to get his against the Steelers.
Because Ike's not around.
Right, because Ike's not around. Whoever thought we'd be saying that? But, outside of that final meeting that Ike had against A.J. Green, I think in the past, though, before that, Ike had played A.J. Green really well up until that final meeting between the two teams last season where I think it was clear that Ike Taylor just wasn't healthy at that time and really had lost a step. But I mean, he's gone now. So you're still going to have situations here where you're going to have A.J. Green on Blake or Cockrell, and how they do on those plays might end up being the difference maker, because I think, you know, Tyler Eifert, as good as he is, where you worry about Tyler Eifert the most, in my opinion, is in the red zone. You know, you just keep him out of the end zone.
12 TDs.
Yeah, just you know, take that area of his game away from him. Let him have his seven catches for 60 yards or whatever, but just, you know, limit his production in the red zone, I think is key with him. And you hit it with Jones and Sanu, not overly flashy players, but those are guys that have been in that system for a number of years now, and you know they're very underrated, and they really compliment guys like AJ Green, Tyler Eifert well, and then you have a guy like Gio Bernard who catch the ball coming out of the backfield as well too. So they are a dangerous team, but I think the prime matchup in here, and here's where Steeler fans will go nuts if the Steelers lose this game, and it's because of AJ Green getting up over the top of Blake. I just don't think they have the confidence in Brandon Boykin to play outside. Now, does that mean that if AJ Green starts this game with, you know, 4 catches in the first half for 100 yards and a touchdown, that they don't shake things up or do shake things up? I doubt they will, because I just don't think they view Brandon Boykin as an outside guy. I think this whole thing with this Brandon Boykin is what I've said all along, is they just were more comfortable giving Gay the snaps in the slot, and I think the reason this change has been made now is redistribution of snaps and to get Blake off the field in certain instances, and we'll see if they'll be able to get him off the field in those certain instances.
I would guarantee you we won't see Brandon Boykin on the outside this game. Guarantee it.
Yeah, I will be shocked too.
Yeah. Okay, so other things from the press conference, Dave. I mean, the Pouncey thing. Who knows? He's not going to play this year. I guess. I mean, who knows?
Playoffs, maybe.
State secret.
And I don't know why it is. I don't know where you lose a competitive advantage there.
I asked him. I mean, we got more of an answer than we've gotten all year long. He's in the facility, so.
I just don't understand that.
Jacoby Jones done. I really, not too much.
Are you surprised he wasn't waived?
Well, I just didn't want to ask that question. I sat there and I thought about it and said, why is he still on the roster? I didn't want to sound like a jerk, but why is he still on the roster?
Exactly. For sure. I mean, if you're going to bench the guy like this, and you're going to go to the effort that you did.
Did you get so I said to Sammy, is Sammy Coates going to get it? Like, are you going to give him a helmet? If you're not going to give him a helmet, he shouldn't be on the team, right?
Right. I mean, if you have a specialist, the number 53 guy on your roster.
It's like 3 Archer. If you're not going to play him, he shouldn't be on the roster.
Right. A number 53 guy like that shouldn't be. I mean, and when you think about it, at some point, Sammy Coates, we all hope, is going to be a prime player in this offense 2016 and beyond. But right now, if he dresses on offense, what's he give you special teams-wise? Nothing. Okay?
Right, he's not going to be a coverage guy.
Right. He's not going to be a kick coverage guy for you. You're dressing a guy that's probably not even going to get snaps in the game right now at this point, barring injury. So, in my opinion, if you're going to have a guy like Jacoby Jones not dressing on, not getting help, and we know sure that he's a specialist, why in the heck, I mean, when are you going to give him the opportunity? You know, Mike Tomlin talks about, well, we're
right.
going to give him an opportunity
never.
To bounce
never,
back.
Never.
Or, right. When are you? You know?
Okay, so whatever.
And it's not and people are trying to make this money related as well too. And even though Jacoby's rest of his contract's guaranteed the rest of the season because he's vested. A vested guy, you're only talking about $200,000+ that's owed to him over the course of these final 4 weeks. And oh yeah, for him, in order to claim that, he'd have to file, file to get that. And players can only do that once during a career. I mean, is it worth $200,000 for him to file? This decision that Tomlin made or hasn't made yet with Jacoby Jones is not contract related. Who knows? The team, I think, was off on Tuesday.
No, the Dree Archer thing, somebody asked him and Tuesday, and he was waived. You know, something happened with Jacoby, and he was waived that afternoon. But I would – well, somebody told me
– I guess
Jacoby bought an apartment in Pittsburgh this week.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord, I hope not. That's a stupid decision on his part anyway, because he's scheduled to make $3 million.
He's not coming back next year.
Yeah, $3 million. He's not coming back.
I'm living in a hotel, dude. Listen, whatever. All right, so let's keep moving. So
you need to search the real estate records for that.
I need to sell a place I don't own.
There you go.
There was something else that was
Toussaint.
Oh yeah. So I asked him, was it injury related or not? And look, hey, this is another thing we can't judge at all. So the guy looked good in practice. Look, he carried the ball what, two times. He looked good. I have no idea. I don't, you know. I know you're jonesing to have Taubman be the kick returner. I asked him if Toussaint could return kicks. He said, we'll see, but we're not going to see. It's going to be Wheaton. But I'm guessing Taubman's now an expendable guy.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
I'm thinking of you when I asked that question.
It's shocking.
Could return kicks. I said, yeah, I was thinking of you. Just so
Because to be quite honest, I'm not there at practice. You're not there at practice. The guys that the media guys that are at practice,
they're not doing kick returns. You're not going to see anything on it.
Yeah, I mean they can't. But I think more than anything, I was just surprised from the fact that from a running back standpoint, that Toussaint dressed over Taubman and
he got snaps. You
know, he got some snaps. Got four carries for 12 yards and had a long of seven in there as well too. Now a couple of snaps came in garbage time after the fact, but look, it's not his fault.
Seven
yards
was a real carry. I mean, it was, you know, all of a
sudden, exactly. But here's the thing with Taubman. I don't understand why even him, you know, why he's not given a chance to return a kick or two. And that's only based on the tape that I've watched and his statistical resume. It just does not make sense. I mean, look, is Taubman going to be a guy that's going to break a 90-yard touchdown return for you? Probably not. But man. What if he can break a 35 or a 40-yard return from you? That's something you got to look at. But you know, here's what's going to happen now. It looks like they're going to move forward with Marcus Wheaton, who had a pretty decent string of returns there towards the end of last year. So he's not a stranger when it comes to that. And then we saw how, you know, Antonio Brown can surprise you and take one to the house like he did, you know, the other night against Indianapolis. But I guess it just goes back. I would much rather have Ross Ventrone on this roster right now than I would Jacoby Jones, because at least you know that Ross Ventrone is a guy that you can dress. You know what you're going to get hit out of him on special teams. It's just not an empty body there, collecting dust. And that's the way it looks like what's going to happen with Jacoby Jones.
Yeah, I thought that was a great point on Monday when you brought it up that you know, there are better uses, and Jacoby Jones isn't an insurance policy because you're not going to put him in there.
If you need him during the game, he's probably not dressed. So
right, and he's not going to be a receiver for you, Sammy Coates. If you're going to dress somebody, dress Sammy Coates. Let him get the opportunity. So it doesn't make any sense to have him on the roster. But again, we're talking about the 53rd guy. Other things out of the press conference, Dave.
Yeah, he talked about Martavis Bryant and how, I don't know about you, but people were bombarding me on Twitter the other early in the game saying, where's Martavis Bryant at?
First
because
series.
DHB saw a lot of snaps in there. Mike
the
Tomlin,
you know, made a nice catch on a 21-yard play early in the game on a pattern where they ran, they flooded the left side and he ran a square out and caught it. I mean, you know, the guy's a perfectly serviceable fourth receiver.
Oh, yeah,
special
absolutely.
Teams guy, fourth receiver, yeah. Perfectly serviceable.
And you're talking about Darius Heyward-Bey, but I think this might be the end of the line from it. At some point, that only gets you so far. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to catch six balls a game for you. So it was like, who was that Arnez Battle a few years ago? Remember him?
Oh, was he on our team?
Yeah, he's on Steelers for a short time.
Man, I do remember Arnez Battle. I don't ever remember him wearing black. Oh.
Yeah, he was a special team. He was a special teams guy. But to me, back to Bryant and Darius Heyward-Bey. I was shocked that Darius Heyward-Bey got that many snaps early on. But I mean, after those first couple of series, that, you know, played very limited amount of snaps after that. But Mike I guess Mike, or the media question was to Mike pretty much was this a disciplinary thing with Martavis early in the game? And Mike Tomlin said, no, it wasn't. So there's no, you know, we have no reason not to believe him. Now, Martavis didn't miss practice and a half or something like that.
Yeah, up and who knows? Yeah, he just said it was situational football is his answer to that stuff. And I don't know, situational football. He didn't play the first series or two, and our boy Boykin didn't play the first series or two, and then they changed everything up. Everything went well, coincidentally or not, when things changed up. So it is what it is.
And Shazier, you know, no reason to be alarmed there, being Shazier didn't see some time, and I think some people read a little bit too much into that, and you and I even kind of talked about that before we got on the podcast there. Yes, Vince Williams did play snaps in that game, but it really wasn't from a rotational thing, because I think Vince, and I even wrote about this earlier in the day, Vince Williams only played 13 defensive snaps against the Colts, and in fact, he only played three in the second
right.
half.
He played a series of 10 snaps. And on that series, he made the first three tackles in the series. But the question was asked, you know, you rotated these guys. They didn't rotate him. He played a series in the first half, and he played three snaps in the second half.
Exactly, and that was it in the story. So I, you know, there's not anything really to be read into that whatsoever. I think it was kind of like the angle of, well, was this done because of him coming off of the concussion? Look, if he wasn't cleared from that concussion, he wasn't going to play. I think you brought that up several times over the years. I think it's very important to remember is they're not going to dress players that they don't think they can play.
Right.
You know, from an injury standpoint, I don't think if you got a guy questionable, I really don't think, you know, either he can or he can't. If he can't handle the full slate of snaps, then he shouldn't play. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle Heath Miller this week, because in my opinion, there's no reason to address Heath Miller if you can't get 48 snaps out of, you know, that kind of thing there. So he had a few interesting things to say about Jesse James, but I think everybody will agree right now, if you go back and watch that tape, that the biggest thing with Jesse James right now is his blocking. So and that was the same thing that same knock on him coming out of Penn State as well too. So overall, really, you know, we didn't learn a whole heck of a lot.
No, when you're 45-10, not a lot to talk about, right? I mean, things were good.
Absolutely. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we missed here. No, I think we pretty much wrapped up everything as far as that concerns. So
let's get to our fan, man. We got Paul Denner Jr. coming up, Cincinnati Inquirer, cincinnati.com, and loved having him on earlier this year, and we'll get the latest on what's going on in Cincinnati. Okay, welcome back to part two of the Terrible Podcast. And as we do every Wednesday, we'd love to have a beat writer with us covers the opposing team and the Steelers and the Bengals. Huge game for the Steelers. Huge game for the Bengals as well, obviously. Trying to make sure they get a playoff bye in the first round of the playoffs in Paul Brown Stadium coming up 1 o'clock on Sunday. And we're pleased to have Paul Denner Jr. of Cincinnati.com. Paul, appreciate, as always, you taking the time to be with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Great to be back.
Paul, let me ask you a question. Are the Bengals the best team in the league right now?
In the AFC, I think you could definitely hear the argument. You know, they went to Arizona a couple weeks back, and it was a game where it was a play or a yard away from either team winning, and, you know, Arizona ended up winning that game 34-31, so you'd have to give the nod to them in the league. But in this conference, you know, the way the Patriots in the current state, if you're talking today, I think you could definitely make that argument. They're certainly the most complete of all the teams out there.
So you know the drill. We know the drill. It's a simple question in Cincinnati, and we're not going to know the answer until they win their first playoff game. And hopefully for people in Cincinnati, they get a bye, and that playoff game is one of the final four. And it's all about Andy Dalton. But let me ask you this. When they play on Sunday in Cincinnati for the Steelers, look, for both teams, it's a big game for what we talked about. But what is the weakness of the Cincinnati Bengals?
That's a good question. You know, they've done a pretty good job of shoring up a few of their weaknesses. I think that we've seen at times this year some of the best pass rushing teams have been able to get after them pretty good, and Chase Dalton. And that's really been a key to slowing them down. I mean, you look at the two teams, really the three teams that slowed them offensively this year. You know, you're talking about the Texans and what they were able to do, and the Steelers. Yeah. You know, they were able to find ways to get through this offensive line, which has done a really good job for the most part of protecting Dalton. And it's been proven all year that no matter what the defense is, if the pocket's clean, he's been tearing it up. You know, whether it was Seattle or whoever, if they keep him clean with all the weapons he has, he's an unbelievable point guard back there distributing it around. And has been this year, and not making the mistakes that you see in years past. So to me, that's the key. If this offensive line holds up, which it has the majority of the games this year, you know, they're going to be right there.
So let me ask you one thing before Dave jumps in here, and we'll get into the details of it. How important, how significant is it for the Bengals this week around the team? Look, every game matters in the league, and Steelers-Bengals matters in the league, and I know they're paying attention. There's no doubt about that. Is this another game for the Bengals because they're 10-2 and they're going to win the division, or is it heightened?
I think it's heightened slightly, but this team, you know, and the Steelers are familiar with this, you know, in years, when you have continuity, consistency, and a head coach that really knows how to set the proper tone, the Bengals have done a very good job of taking it by the cliche week to week and not letting any game feel bigger than the other one. I mean, you know, few are as good as that as Mike Tomlin. I mean, I know every time we have him on the conference call, it's the most straightforward this week is the next game, I mean, that you can get. And the Bengals and Marvin Lewis are of that exact same cut from that same cloth. They don't let any game be bigger than the previous week and keep trying to get the same focus, the same routine, and the same standard set. And it's worked for them. I mean, you look over the past 4 years, I think it's been the biggest reason for their regular season success is their ability to play at a certain level every week and never play down to opponent. I mean, they rarely fall victim to a trap game or an upset or anything like that. I mean, they're very good at week to week and keeping that pace.
Paul, before we go any further, what's the expected status of Tyler Eifert supposed to be this week? I know Marvin not good at giving in depth injury updates, especially at the beginning of the week. But what's the kind of the feel with Eifert? Is he going to play Sunday?
Yeah, Marvin Lewis is not good at getting injury updates any day of the week, any time of year.
Join the club, man.
Yeah,
shoot me a book.
it's the secret society of injuries that no one really understands or knows. Eifert, honestly, right now we don't know. He did not practice last week. He sustained a stinger in the game against the Rams, which for him is an interesting injury because he's had it before. He had a stinger towards the end of his rookie season and kept him out of the season finale. And he was only able to muster up 3 plays in that playoff game against San Diego in the first round that year. You know, it's kind of a concerning issue. So I think they're going to be cautious with him. We do know that much. But we also don't know how much they were just holding him out last because it was the Browns and they knew they could beat him without him. We'll know more today and tomorrow. I mean, if he is not a participant in any way, shape, or form the next 2 days, I'd say it's pretty highly unlikely that he's going to go out there and play. So we'll definitely know more as the next couple of days of practice evolve. But at this point, I don't know.
Yeah, when you and moving forward, talking about, and you kind of already hit on this, I just wanted to see if I could get you to talk a little bit more maybe about what you observed. You know, basically the Steelers and the Texans are the two teams that really have given the Bengals offense any fits whatsoever. Now, you flip over to the defensive side of the ball, though, the Bengals have been pretty, when you look at them on tape, at least the 6 games that I've watched, they look fairly consistent. You know what you're going to get from them. But what, you know, have you seen this offense kind of morph any you know, since the bye week, or is this just Hugh Jackson? I mean, Hugh Jackson's doing incredible things, and he really keeps defensive units guessing. But have you seen that evolve even more in the last, you know, like I said, since the bye week?
Yeah, I think he's always kind of evolving a little bit in that way. And I think he's had a desire all year to really be able to line up and smash mouth teams. And there's been the long season long motivational dance attempting to get Jeremy Hill back to what he was last year. And, you know, the first really until the last 2 weeks, he'd been sort of a shell of that guy. He'd been doing a lot of dancing around, a lot of tentative stuff out there, just not looking at all like the guy who led the NFL in rushing them the last 9 weeks of last season. And the last 2 weeks, the evolution we've seen is the return of Jeremy Hill as a factor, which is a pretty scary element considering it was the primary weapon of this team last year offensively. And now if you can get him doing what he was doing last year and have Dalton doing what he's doing this year with the weapons all healthy, I don't know how you slow the offense, to tell you the truth, because he is such a dynamic runner, particularly when he gets to the second level. So, that's been the evolution, has been getting him going and starting to see that now. He's got 38 carries for 184 yards the last 2 weeks, averaging 4.8 a pop. That's the Jeremy Hill of 2014, and I think that's the evolution of this offense right now.
Paul, man, we're sitting here and busting the Steelers defense, and they've got big questions in the secondary, trying to figure out what to do. But man, people in Pittsburgh are looking at this offense and saying it's the best offense in the NFL. And history would tell you, career wise, whatever, Ben's better than Andy Dalton. But if you go position by position, whose offense would you take?
That's a good question. I think you'd have a – you can go position by position all you want. I'll always take the best quarterback, and you can mess around with the rest of it.
Yeah.
That's clearly Ben. I mean, he's been it for a long time in this league and proven himself. And, his ability to hit deep shots is pretty impressive. The wide receiver core, that's always a fun debate to have, and I think, the Steelers side, I'm sure many of your listeners would stand up on the soapbox for those three. I think the Bengals don't get enough credit for Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu and how good they are.
Let me jump in and ask you, what are they going to do with these two guys? They're both in the last year of the rookie deal, right? Are they gonna bring them back?
Yeah, one of the two will definitely be back. I mean, we can guarantee that. To me, looking a year ahead when we were talking about this past offseason, it was sort of a year for the two to decide which one got the contract here. But as dynamic as this offense has become with the three of them and Tyler Eifert on the field together, the more I lean towards thinking that they pay both of them. And it's going to depend, this team, I know you guys don't delve as deep into, looking a year ahead on contracts with other teams, but the Bengals had a ton of players who are up after this year. This is sort of Custer's last stand for this particular group because there's going to be a lot of guys who are going to be getting their first big contracts that are going to get paid, and the Bengals just can't pay them all. The curse that was the blessing of the way they've drafted the last four years.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a good chance both of them will be back, but there are so many variables involved in that with other players. It's honestly hard to say at this point.
Any idea? Like, are these guys three-year, $15 million guys, or are they more than that?
I think that Marvin Jones has made a pretty significant play to be more than that. I think Mohamed Sanu is probably a little bit more limited. He's more of a slot guy. But when asked to play the number one role for a lot of last season, he made a lot of great plays. The problem was he had a lot of drops. He hasn't dropped a ball this year, which is fairly remarkable. And he's a real dynamic weapon. He does a lot of different things. I mean, they'll run him in the backfield. Heck, he'll throw it. He's got a perfect passer rating. I'll tell you all about that. And he can just do a lot of things. So, to me, Marvin Jones is the number one piece and the guy that will definitely be back. And the question would be, you know, if they can afford and find the money to pay Mohamed Sanu. I think they want to.
When you flip over to the other side of the ball and attacking the Bengals defense, we saw in that first meeting between these two teams, the Steelers really tried to get Heath Miller involved early and often in that game. He ended with 10 receptions, 105 yards. Unfortunately, Ben Roethlisberger threw the ball away three times in that game, which really, in my opinion, was the difference in the football game. Miller might not play Sunday because of a rib injury he suffered a couple weeks ago. How big is that? And is that how, I mean, do you see that as the best way to attack that Bengals defense is sorted down the seam, either with a tight end or a slot receiver?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, if you're looking for a weakness in the defense, this secondary has traditionally done a very good job covering the deep ball. Reggie Nelson has 7 interceptions to lead the NFL not because he's making a ton of plays, but because a lot of balls are getting tipped, they're getting overthrown, and they're always back there in coverage in the right place at the right time. George Iloku is one of the better cover safeties in the league, doesn't get probably enough run. And so for that fact, it's hard to hit over the top of these guys. Now, their linebackers are not going to be as good in coverage as some others across the league. So I think that's why you see that strategy a lot of teams deploying, trying to take advantage of that. And particularly right now, is Vontaze Burfict has been back. His first game back was the first Steelers game. And he's been ramped up gradually and played better as it's gone along. But, you know, I still don't think that he's the same dynamic guy in coverage that he was before the injury yet. He's still working his way to that. So, yeah, that's where you can probably take advantage.
Have opposing offenses tried to get the ball to the running backs out of the backfield in the passing game enough, or is that, you know, are you seeing this on a week to week basis that they're doing it and they're just not making any headway with it? I guess what I'm saying is could this be another weakness with them having to spend so much time with Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown on the back end, you know, with a lot of possibly some cover two shell.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, they do a really good job at a lot of the quick hit underneath check down, trying to get running backs out. I mean, the Rams have a terrible offense, but the one thing they do is a lot of that quick hit horizontal stuff with Todd Gurley, Tavon Austin, and the Bengals just train wrecked it. I mean, their corners are very instinctive and very good out of the edges, and they do a good job on tracking underneath stuff and gang tackling. So I think teams have attempted it, but not had a ton of success. For that reason, we haven't seen running backs have big games catching the ball to the backfield, I think, except for Le'Veon Bell every time he plays the Bengals. But obviously, obviously that's not going to be an issue this weekend.
But, you know, Paul, this is a really interesting team, and it's an interesting matchup, you know, obviously for the Bengals, as we talked about. And by the way, we're talking with Paul Tenner Jr., beat writer covering the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer and Cincinnati.com. First of all, is Aloka going to play? I heard he was banged up.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys that are banged up in their secondary. Leon Hall had a back injury, didn't play last week. Aloka hurt his groin in practice and wasn't able to go. And I think that they're probably trending in the right direction after the week off, but they go in the same boat as Eifert, that we'll kind of find out as the week progresses.
Is Gino of 2013 again? Is he that guy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, it's been fascinating to watch this guy. I mean, he clearly just wasn't right last year. And particularly in pass rush, but he has been as dominant a player as I've seen. I think he's better this year than he was in 12 and 13.
Really?
He's changing everything. He's just train wrecking every play. If you have any questions about your guards or any of your interior line play, he will absolutely exploit. I mean,
does the league know that? I mean, you know, we hear about JJ all the time. JJ's going to be defensive player of the year. Is Gino going to be second? Do people know that Gino's back to where he was?
Well, that's a conversation. It's funny you mention that. I'm actually writing about that for my, you know, sort of my game day story for this weekend, is because I've talked to a bunch of people, whether it's people that watch the film, the coaches, the people that really see it, they see it, because in this particular defense, it changes everything. I mean, he throws off the timing. He doesn't just try to get sacks, of which he has plenty. He has eight. from the defensive tackle position, mind you. But he tries to sack the quarterback with the guard. He picks the guard up and throws him at the quarterback half the time. And it's just, it's a complete disruption where you can't step forward, and it throws off the timing of the entire defense. The Bengals are hardly blitzing because they don't need to. So they drop seven back and let Geno and Carlos Dunlap go to work. And the quarterbacks end up lofting it up to him for picks. It's been the way it's worked all year, and it's only working because of 97. And anybody that watches the film attempting to break down this defense figures it out pretty quick.
Carlos Dunlap, he's gone back and forth with Marcus Gilbert several times now. Of course, the two both hail from University of Florida, and they know each other well. It seems like Marcus Gilbert's gotten the better of the matchup the last few times. But even so, you know, the Bengals still did enough to force Roethlisberger into some bad throws, and he made three bad throws that you know, obviously cost him the game the last time. Has Marcus Gilbert become Carlos Dunlap's kryptonite of sorts?
Yeah, you know, maybe. Carlos would certainly like to have a little bit more of an effect on the game against the Steelers. He's really stepped his game up this year, but I think it's also partially a beneficiary of 97 backing a lot of guys into him. But, you know, I think he's ready to have one of those breakout games. You know, these Steelers games tend to be very defining games for players around here. I mean, I still can remember the 2012 game where Geno Atkins just took it over in an absolute slugfest. And people still talk about his performance around here that day. And I think Carlos would love to be a guy to say that, but he's going to have to – yeah, you're right. He's going to have to find a way to start beating Gilbert to make that happen.
Paul, you're thinking about this big picture here. I think Dave and I would both be willing to admit that the Bengals are the deepest roster in the NFL. And obviously the question is going to be the quarterback, and we're not going to know the answer to that until they get in the playoffs. Can the Steelers go in there and win this game?
Yeah. I mean, that offense is so good that, you know, I absolutely think they can come in and win. And, you know, we just don't that often see teams sweep this series. It's so tough to beat each other when they're so evenly matched. They absolutely can come in here and win. I have no doubt about that. I think it's going to be a really close game. And, you know,
Would the Bengals at all look at it negatively if the Steelers walk out, let's say, a 28-24 win? Would it be at all a downer for the Bengals? I mean, the Steelers, it's a, you know, there's not as much of a, there's no safety net here in the playoffs. They can lose one more game and maybe get in the playoffs. But, you know, obviously the Bengals are in the playoffs. They're going to win the division. But would anybody be hanging their heads if they lose this game?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, as far as you're looking at some of the top teams in the league that they've played, they beat Seattle during the season when Seattle was struggling and everyone was beating them. And they went to Arizona and played them close, but they lost. And so you're talking about some of their games against the best in the league. Even though they have 10 wins, they've taken a couple of L's. So I think they'd like to, between this game and the game at Denver, to get one of those signature wins in the regular season so that come playoff time, you're hanging your hat on that to have that confidence.
And awesome stuff. Go ahead, give us a prediction.
I do think the Bengals find a way to win. I just, being at home, I think that it'll be a shootout, though. I think that you're up in the 30s, somewhere in the 31-28 range. But it's one play, one turnover is really going to be the difference.
Paul, really appreciate your time. For our listeners, check him out on Twitter at Paul Denner, PaulDehner, Jr., Paul Denner, Jr., Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. Really appreciate both weeks with being with us, Paul, and giving us the insights. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Dave, good fun as always, man. Paul Denner, Jr., great insights. We know what's happening. This is a really good football team. For them, the game is meaningful still to try and get out of the bye, make sure they get a bye in the first round.
Yeah, absolutely. And what people didn't hear is we kind of joked with Paul at the end of the interview before we hung up with him that hopefully we'll get a chance to do this one more time this season with him. How great would that be, David? I mean, the odds of it probably happening, who knows, you know, but another Bengals-Steelers game in the playoffs would be great. And I think Paul does a great job of kind of prepping us for the Bengals as well, too. You and I will continue on. We'll look at a little bit more tape and we'll break this game down a little bit more on Friday as well. We'll be back with our picks for the entire week 14 and talk about whatever news and notes comes happens between now and Friday as well too on the Friday podcast. Before we close out, David, I want to make sure I hit it. People have really been generous with the donations here last several weeks, to be quite honest with you. So I know I've read off a lot of these names, but I want to make sure that I get these names out there in case I didn't miss some people. Junior Anderson, thank you for your donation. Chris Chan, thank you for your donation. Don't have a name on this one, but it's 10 Cup 1973, actually from Steeler Chip is his username. So Chip, certainly do appreciate that. Matthew Forbes, Jeremy Clark, George Kroger, Nicholas Shinetta, Gareth Ballard, Michael Stickings. I know I've hit some of these before, but people, we certainly do appreciate. Look, we talked about at the top of the podcast there how rewarding it is to hear from you, some of you people all across the world and across the United States, and certainly rewarding when you give us a donation as well too. So we, Dave and I, want to make sure we haven't spent enough time in the past of acknowledging your support to the show. We want to make sure we do that today. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Make sure you're listening to David's show on 970 ESPN in the afternoons as well, too. You had Hokey Bro on the other day, didn't you?
I did. I snuck Hokey Bro in last Friday. So a little.
He's a big lover of the podcast.
Even mentioned it on the show. He said, I listen to the podcast. So if it's good enough for Hokey, it's good enough for most people.
Absolutely it is. And David, have a great couple of days, and we'll get together and we'll do this again on Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.